Hey guys, welcome back to the Thrilogy podcast. My name's Cameron and I'm here with my two co-hosts.
I'm Krista.
And I'm Morgan. Before I pass it on to you, Cameron, I wanted to give a super special shout out to @itwasthehusband on Instagram, also known as Bethany, the host of the podcast Milk and Murder. Not only does she have an amazing podcast, but she has been so kind and welcoming to us as new podcasters. And yesterday she included us on a really cute Instagram reel shout out and totally made our day.
Yeah, no, that was super, super nice. And I love her podcast as well. But with that said, I actually want to give a special shout out as well. This shout out is going to Johnny W, J_MH, and Kelsey for their amazing reviews on Apple Podcasts. If you want a shout out in our next episode, just head on over to Apple Podcasts and you can leave your review there. So today we're going to be doing something a little bit different, a conspiracy theory. But for all of our true crime lovers out there, don't worry. This conspiracy has a dash of true crime just for you. If you've been listening to the podcast the last couple of weeks, you've probably heard us cover the case of the Viking Sally and the murder that took place aboard the ship. Now, like I said during that podcast, that murder isn't the only dark past the ship has seen. The MS Estonia was a cruise ferry built in 1980 at a German shipyard. Originally, the ship was ordered by a Norwegian shipping company with intended traffic between Germany and Norway. But at the last minute, the company withdrew their order and the contract went to one of the partners in the Viking Line franchise. When Viking Line took over the construction contract, the ship was lengthened from the original length of approximately 449 feet to approximately 509 feet, and the overall structure of the ship was largely redesigned. Now, I've been talking about the Viking Line company, and this may sound familiar to you thanks to the case we covered a few weeks ago, like I just said. But in that very case, the murder of Klaus aboard the Viking Sally in 1987 was not the first murder on the ship. In fact, just 1 year prior, in 1986, there was another murder that took place. Now, the 1986 murder that took place on this very ship is a little bit different because while the 1987 murder went unsolved for many years, this case, well, it was a little bit more cut and dry. It certainly didn't lack a gruesome murder along with one hell of a story, though. On July 10th, 1986, Reyo Hamar killed Antti Eljala, a businessman who Hamar was stealing money from. When Antti caught Hamar stealing from his cabin, he immediately went to the onboard security. But before he could, Hamar stabbed him in the throat and eventually finished murdering Antti by strangling him with a bedsheet. Just 2 years later, Hamar was found guilty of the murder and was sentenced to life at Kakkola prison in Turku, Finland, another familiar city to our Thrilogy listeners. Now, just 2 years after being found guilty, Hamar actually escaped the prison with a fellow inmate, killing a security guard in the process. Hamar would eventually kill the other inmate along the way, but was later recaptured in Stockholm, Sweden. And while this doesn't have much to do with today's story, I found it pretty interesting, so I wanted to share it with both you and our listeners since there isn't enough to do a completely separate podcast episode. Generally speaking, Finland is very soft on crime, and I think what you guys are about to hear is probably going to shock you as much as it shocked me. Hamar was actually pardoned by Finnish President Tarja Halonen in 2004. So this means he served less than 10 years in prison. Eventually, Hamar went on to change his name, but again, in 2011, he actually stabbed a random man. Now, in court, Hamar had said that he did not remember the stabbing, and he actually stated that he had accidentally fallen and the knife had hit the victim in the back during the fall. As you can imagine, the court thought that this was complete BS. In the end, Hamar apologized for his actions and was forced to pay the victim 6,700 euros for pain and suffering, but that was it. Isn't that wild? I mean, I know it has nothing to do with the conspiracy that we're talking about today, but isn't that just nuts?
That's so crazy to me. But so refresh my memory a little bit. I thought in the last case that we were talking about on the Viking Sally, the authorities actually did a really good job and were super thorough. So it's like, isn't that right? Like, weren't they really great about it? So it's just surprising to me that they're so soft on crime.
Yeah, it's weird because in this case, it's not that they were inefficient, right? Like, they obviously found him. He was found guilty very quickly. Like, everything went well up until him escaping prison. I tried my best to actually look and see if there was a reason that he was pardoned by the president, but I honestly couldn't find anything. All I found was that he was pardoned and that was it. So yeah, it's wild. And like I said, Finland is soft on crime. I've seen a couple documentaries about it, and they definitely work towards more of a rehabilitation rather than, you know, kind of a punishment system like we do in the US. But nonetheless, I feel like for a man like him who has already killed like, what, three people at this point, I don't know that a fine and being pardoned out of prison was the best idea. But again, doesn't have much to do with our case, but interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, they definitely seem like they have a good grasp on how to investigate something and make sure it's quick. But then in terms of carrying out the actual justice, they're definitely falling short.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird. But again, and maybe there's a reason for it.
Sorry.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, like, I think it's great, the rehabilitation thing. And I think we should be implementing that more in the U.S. But it's just funny, like, in this specific case, to hear all of his crimes and that they were so soft on him.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, I agree. I think rehabilitation definitely is the way to go. I mean, ideally, we want to prepare people to go back into society and not have people in prison again. I don't know that he should have been the prime example of that, but
well, especially because he lied and said he had fallen and the knife had accidentally hit someone. Like, it just seems funny.
Well, yeah, he's killed a security guard. He's killed an inmate. He's killed the man on the ship. He stabbed a random man. He escaped prison. Like, I don't know that this is the guy that we should be practicing rehabilitation on, but who knows?
Yeah, it's interesting how in like Nordic countries, like you said, they have a low crime rate and everything, yeah. But you never think that something like this would happen there, especially the escaping from prison and killing a guard.
Yeah, it's like no, super absolutely. Crime. Absolutely. And what I think too, what happens a lot of times is these crimes are, you know, for Nordic, for the actual country, like for Finland, I'm sure this was in the news and I'm sure this was something that was huge, but it's not big enough to hear, you know, like in the US, right? Like we have bigger stuff that happens than this on a daily basis, you know? So I think a lot of people sometimes forget that while a lot of these countries are very safe, and they are, don't get me wrong, stuff still does happen. And we've seen that in the last couple of cases. So now jumping back into what we were originally talking about, and that is this ship and the conspiracies behind it. On September 28th, 1994, the MS Estonia was crossing the Baltic Sea, originally setting off from Tallinn, Estonia, and would eventually arrive in Stockholm, Sweden. On board the ship, there were 989 passengers, including 186 crew members, a large crew because of the ship's size. Most of these passengers were Swedish, but there were also some Estonian passengers, and the majority of the crew was actually also Estonian. Now, reports say that the ship's weight was unbalanced due to the large amount of passengers and cargo aboard, which actually included personal vehicles as well. Remember, this is a ship, but it's also a ferry. And it actually had the ship leaning towards the starboard side of the ship, which, if you're unfamiliar with ship terminology, that just means that it was leaning towards the right side. The seas were rough, waves were high, and there were reported winds of anywhere from 32 to 45 miles per hour. But the MS Estonia was large, and it was made to withstand the typical Baltic Sea weather, and the captain also commented that the weather conditions were within, what he said, normal standards of operation. However, at about 1 a.m., the first sign of trouble happened when passengers and crew members heard a large metallic bang, presumably caused by a heavy wave hitting the bow doors. Over the next 10 minutes, the doors would open and the ship would start to fill with water. Water began to quickly fill the ship, and the boat started to tip and lean even more, rolling a total of 60 degrees. The MS Estonia was turned to port, but unfortunately the four engines would eventually turn to a crawl before giving out completely. At 1:22 a.m., a mayday call was sent to the Silja Europa, another nearby ship. With the MS Estonia no longer having power, however, their exact location, it couldn't be shared. Luckily, though, a few moments later, power came back just long enough to share their location with the Silja Europa and the Mariella. The search and rescue of the MS Estonia followed arrangements that were set up under the 1979 International Convention on Maritime Search and Rescue. Now, the Baltic Sea is one of the world's busiest shipping areas, typically with over 2,000 vessels at sea at any given time. The search and rescue plans that I had mentioned earlier assumed that the ship's own lifeboats and nearby ferries and other ships would provide immediate help and helicopters that could be airborne after about an hour. This plan had actually worked for the relatively small number of accidents involving boat sinkings or ship sinkings, but most believe that's largely in part because many of these other incidences had involved ships with way fewer passengers on board. Mariella, the first of five ferries to reach the scene of the accident, arrived at 2:12 a.m. However, the initial Mayday report was actually misunderstood by a nearby radio tower, and a full-scale emergency was only declared at 2:30 a.m. after the Mariella had arrived. As you can imagine, this would have greatly affected the response time of so many other nearby ships. The Mariella used life rafts, and they were able to save 13 people while they reported the location of other rafts and survivors to the nearby Swedish and Finnish rescue helicopters, who would actually first arrive at 3:05 a.m. One of these helicopters took survivors to shore, while the other chose a riskier option of actually landing on the ferries. It was a difficult decision and a difficult part of the rescue mission overall, but that one helicopter alone was able to save 44 people, which was more than all of the other ferries. Finally, the MS Isabella arrived and saved 16 survivors with its rescue slide. Now, most tragically, of the 989 passengers on board, only 138 were rescued, with one of them actually later dying in a hospital. This accident took 852 lives, mostly due to drowning and hypothermia. The survivors of the sinking were mostly young, healthy males. Only 7 passengers over the age of 55 survived, and probably most tragically, there were no survivors under the age of 12. In total, about 650 passengers were still inside the ship when it sank. With numbers like these, the sinking of the MS Estonia was one of the deadliest peacetime sinkings after the Titanic in 1912 and after the Empress of Ireland in 1914.
Yeah, that has to be like my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, right? I have never been on a cruise before, but I just feel like you're on a giant ship and there's no land in sight.
There's nowhere you can go. Like, you really do rely on other people and whatever resources the ship has. It's crazy. And I think too, especially with a lot of these, like the MS Estonia, it did frequent trips. Like, this isn't like a cruise line necessarily, right? This is a ferry that goes between two places. And so there are probably multiple trips per week, maybe even per day, depending on where they're going. So honestly, the crew probably never even thought about something like this happening, which is the craziest part.
Did they say that they were aware that the ship was overweight, or is that after it all happened, like that was basically the diagnosis of what led to this?
I couldn't find anything in my research that said that they knew a ton. I think they knew beforehand, right? They knew that it was leaning a little bit, but I don't think they knew that it was enough that something like this could happen. With the weather, I think it was kind of a mix of a lot of different factors, right? Being a little bit overweight, leaning a little bit to the wrong direction. There's storms, there's waves. I think all of that put together is probably what caused such an issue, unless you want to start believing in the conspiracy theories, which we'll dive into in just a second. Now, like I was saying, you can imagine there are some definite conspiracy theories behind the sinking of the ship. Some that are backed with interesting facts and evidence, and others based on longstanding superstitions. Normally, we don't like to talk about conspiracy theories when such a huge tragedy is involved, but we thought this case was especially interesting, not only because of the tragic sinking, but also because of the two separate murders before it. Now, the first theory is definitely more on the superstitious side of things, and that is the theory of the ship's name being changed, not once, not twice, but multiple times throughout the ship's life. This superstition actually goes way back. Legend has it that when every ship is blessed, its name goes into what is referred to as a ledger of the deep. Now, the story goes that the ledger is maintained by Poseidon himself, and that renaming a ship or a boat actually means that you are trying to slip something past the gods, and you will be punished for going behind their back. Now, with that said, there is supposedly a way to properly rename your ship as to not upset the gods. This is what is referred to as a boat name purge. I found all of this information on mysailing.com.au, but I found mostly consistent information regarding this purge among a bunch of different sailing and boating websites as well. The process actually begins with a complete removal of every trace of the boat's current name. This is absolutely essential, and it must be done thoroughly. The way this purge works is that you're supposed to use like whiteout or paint, basically get rid of any trace of the boat's existing name, logbooks, engine and maintenance records, etc. Like, you just have to remove it all. Most people do find it to be easier to just remove all the documents, but some people want to keep those old documents just in case they need them for the future, in which case you would want to like white out or like rip off the old name off of that document. Once you're absolutely sure that every reference to the ship's old identity has been removed, what is left is to prepare a metal tag, kind of like a dog tag, with the old name of the ship written on it in water-soluble ink. You are then to ring the ship's bell to call Poseidon, invoking him by saying the following. And I'm actually going to say it so you guys can kind of understand how superstitious this is and really kind of get an idea. O mighty Poseidon, great ruler of the seas and oceans, to whom all ships and we who venture upon your vast domain are required to pay homage, we implore you in your graciousness to expunge for all time from your records and recollection the name, and then you would say the old name of the ship, which has ceased to be an entity in your kingdom. As proof thereof, we submit this ingot bearing her name to be corrupted through your powers and forever purged from the sea. It is at that point that you would actually take that metal tag, you would throw it from the bow of the ship into the sea. Now, it doesn't end. This keeps going. It is a full ceremony. You would then continue to say, in grateful acknowledgement of your munificence and dispensation, we offer these libations to your majesty and your court. And then at this point, you would be pouring at least a half a bottle of champagne into the sea from east to west, with the remainder being passed among any guests who were present for this purging ceremony. But while the purge is over, now you have to do something called the naming ceremony for the new name of the ship. You'll once again ring the bell. There's a saying that you'll actually go through, very similar to what I said before. You'll pour a bottle of champagne into the sea, except for two glasses this time. One of the glasses will be for the ship's master and the other for the ship's mate. And then finally, there is one last step to appease the gods of the wind, but I'm going to skip it. I think you guys get the point by now. And so it is with all of that said that I think it is probably fair to say that this ritual was not done each time the MS Estonia was renamed. And for that reason, many people believe the ship to have been cursed.
That's so funny because growing up, like we grew up on the beach and doing boating and fishing. And my dad was always like, you cannot ever change the name of a boat. Like it's such bad luck. And I had no idea that it goes like as deep as this.
Yeah. Yeah, like but you can change it, but there's a whole, I mean, you guys just heard the whole ritual, and that was even, like, that wasn't even repeating and doing all the steps. Like, that's just kind of a little glimpse into it. So it's, I never knew about this either until I was researching this. So yeah, it's crazy to me as well.
Yeah. It's also funny how much drinking is, like, ingrained in being a sailor and a captain. Like, yeah, right. Pouring champagne out for your boat's name.
Like you need at least three bottles of champagne to do this ritual. Like, without, like, at least three bottles, like, you're not doing it.
All right. I was like, wait, as you're talking, I was like, okay, this was definitely modernized. Like the ancient Greeks are like pouring out champagne for their boats. But let me not upset.
Yeah, right.
Poseidon.
I was going to say, like Krista said, it's so funny. Like there are all of these kind of superstitious things surrounding a lot of different things, but of course, boating. And I feel like I'm a little superstitious to where I'd probably follow, like, don't rename the boat. I don't know if I would. I don't blame them for not following through with this ritual, but it's just funny.
Well, and I think too, the thing about this theory that's so interesting is that the ship has been, like I said, the ship's been named more than once. It's been renamed multiple times. So like, even if they did it once, I don't think, which I doubt, right? Like, I'm just going to start by saying, I doubt they did this even once, but let's just say that they did it once. Like, I doubt they did it all of the following times. Me personally though, I don't know that I would take the risk. Like now that I know that this exists, if I were to ever have a boat and want to change the name, I don't know that I would take the risk. Like, I knock on wood, I throw salt over my shoulder. Like I do all this stuff just in case. Like you can never be too careful, but who knows?
I know. When I think about it, I'm like, oh, I don't believe in that. But then I'm knocking on wood, I'm throwing salt, I'm doing all of the things.
You hear this story, you're going to be like, yeah, I'm never taking a risk again. No way. Yeah, we're going to do this.
Better safe than sorry.
The next Thrillogy podcast, well, not the next one, but if we ever have a boat, guys, and we ever want to rename it maybe to Thrillogy, we will bring you guys along to do our own name purging ceremony.
Oh, we didn't talk about this beforehand.
We're getting boat guys.
We're all like giggling about like the Poseidon ritual. We're going to wake up to our houses like flooded tomorrow with water. Oh, like, God. Oops.
Okay, well, speaking of that, knock on wood.
Seriously.
So with all of that aside, the other theory is a little bit more politically based and definitely way less superstitious. So during a time of political transition in Sweden back in December of 1994, both the outgoing and incoming prime ministers decided to not recover the MS Estonia or any of the bodies of the victims, but instead to declare the area in the Baltic Sea to be a sanctuary, somewhat like a maritime cemetery. Now, as you can imagine, survivors and relatives of the deceased, they protested against this decision. And in 1997, when the accident report was finally released, blame was actually placed on the German dockyard Meyer Werft, and they were accused of having constructed a ferry unsuitable for the harsh weather conditions of the Baltic Sea, essentially ending, or at least trying to end, any further speculation. But, as we all know, when governments want people to stop speculating, the people usually don't. Some actually believe that the MS Estonia was sabotaged, and in 2001, a journalist and writer shared his theory that the ferry was exposed to a bomb attack or hit by some sort of explosive device. He even claimed that on the ship, there were vehicles loaded with military equipment suggesting that secret Russian weaponry was being smuggled via Estonia to Sweden and then on to other countries. Now, in 1998, another explanation was put forward by a shipbuilding engineer, Anders Björkman, who claimed that the bow visor was actually removed deliberately after the disaster in order to conceal evidence. He initially argued that the MS Estonia was hit by something underwater, suggesting that the ferry might have been hit by a Russian torpedo, like fired from a submarine, something like that, in order to stop the export of sensitive military technology. And these theories continue. There are a bunch of very interesting and even some convincing theories that the sinking was definitely politically motivated. Some are more similar to others, while some take a more extreme viewpoint, but at the end, the idea is all the same. The ship was sunk due to some sort of politically motivated attack. And finally, we have a recent discovery. In September of 2020, a Swedish documentary was released which used special underwater equipment to film the MS Estonia wreckage. This investigation found a 13-foot hole in the ship's hull, and soon after this discovery, the Estonian, Swedish, and Finnish prime ministers announced that a new technical investigation would take place. The head of the Estonian investigation even stated publicly that he believes this new information points to a collision with a submarine and that the hole could not have happened after the ship had sunk. In October of 2020, the Estonian government publicly published a report stating that the hole was simply too small to have sunk the ship as quickly as it did. And even more strangely, especially talking about underlying political movements and motives, the Swedish filmmakers were actually prosecuted for violating the sanctity of the wreck. They would later be acquitted in February of this year, 2021, because the diving actually happened on a German ship in international waters, where Sweden obviously doesn't have any jurisdiction. Additionally, since Germany had not signed the treaty that declares sanctity over the site, they were also covered. And even more recently, this month, June of 2021, the Estonian parliament signed a law allowing the examination of the wreckage site. So, we have some very interesting conspiracy theories, some that are definitely more recent and based in findings and fact, and we have some that are a little bit older and more superstitious. So I'm curious, what do you guys think about everything that has happened on this ship?
Well, I'm just trying to think of like the historical like context in a way, because I know that at least United States history, and I'm sure many other countries' history as well, they've gone through an era where they believe like the Russian spies are among them or somehow infiltrating. So yeah. I found it interesting, like, you know, again, the Nordic countries seem so unproblematic, but they're on the ship and they may have been allegedly transporting war materials or like, you know, weaponry, and then Russia was trying to destroy it. I was like, huh?
Well, you do also have to remember too that not only does Russia border both Finland and Estonia, I actually think it might even does it border Sweden and Norway? It might at the very top. I don't know. I can't. I'm not looking at a map.
I mean, it's definitely close.
Yeah, it's close enough. But and not only that, but Estonia actually used to be part of the Soviet Union. So there are Russian ties there. So I don't put it past the idea of potentially smuggling things like some sort of organized crime or something like that.
Well, if Estonia, because technically in the year that this all took place, the Soviet Union was still
Yeah.
active. So Estonia, I don't know if Estonia was actually Estonia yet.
I'm not sure, actually. And I'm going to look into that really quick because I think that does make a difference. And I mean, you bring up a really good point. A lot of this is stuff that I didn't even really think about until we started, you know, until we started this conversation.
Yeah. I've noticed a lot with like true crime or conspiracy stuff that you have like the crime or the conspiracy at like face value, but so much stuff comes with like historical context, whether it's racially motivated, war motivated, weapon motivated, obviously yeah. money motivated, not just between like governments, but we see that just between two people. So,
yeah. So I'm looking at it and it looks like Estonia was no longer part of the Soviet Union effective on September 6, 1991. And this case was starting, well, the actual sinking of the ship was in 1994. So there, it had been out of the Soviet Union for technically 3 years at this point. But again, I mean, 3 years isn't a lot, especially very when you're talking country. A full, yeah, when you're talking like a full, you know, change of government and change of being, you know, there's still plenty of, and even today, I'm sure there's still a lot of, I mean, I know that there is, I've been to Estonia. There still is a somewhat Russian influence. People still do speak Russian. I think in school, they actually still even learn Russian as like as an optional extra language. So there's still an influence there for sure. And I mean, we're in 2021. So talking about 1994, definitely.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting things to me about this too, and why I'm kind of leaning toward what Krista said, like this might be tied more into, you know, political motivations, the history behind it. You know, like you were saying, the Estonian government, they were publicly saying that the 13-foot hole or whatever it was shouldn't be investigated and that don't even look into it. It couldn't have sunk the ship. But mm-hmm. why would it, if it was, you know, just a sinking, a tragic accident that didn't have any deep, you know, backstory behind it, why would they care if people investigated what caused yeah. this 13-foot hole?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I was actually, so as crazy as this might sound, as I was actually doing the research for this, I was almost more on the side of superstition. Because I'm kind of a matter-of-fact kind of person. I find it very hard to believe in superstition. And I mean, I still do it. Like we talked about, you know, I still knock on wood and do the salt and whatever. But in general, generally speaking, I'm very fact-oriented. And I like to have actual hard fact. But when I started talking about and I got into the part of my research regarding the discovery just last year about finding that 13-foot hole, yeah, I don't know. That really kind of struck me as, okay, well, there is something here, you know, and for a government to come out and say that they do not believe that this hole could have happened from a wave. I mean, I don't know. I think for me, that speaks volumes. I think that's huge. So,
yeah, I feel like a wave wouldn't leave a hole either. Like it would take off the side of something or it would be a more clean cut. It wouldn't leave. A wave would take off the front of a ship or a side of a ship. It's not going to put yeah. a perfect hole in the side of something.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's, yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is hearing that he was talking about how it was just simply even too small to have sunk the ship as quickly as it did. So was there something else on board? Like, was this maybe a mix? You know, maybe it was some sort of attack and it was kind of a planned attack. I don't know. There just seems to be a lot of little things, and it's hard to pinpoint. The one really cool thing about this case is that it's still recent, right? I was just talking about how in just this month of this year, June 2021, that was when the Estonian parliament actually signed law allowing the examination of this wreckage site. So just now, this month, now we're going to be able to have more and more people actually examine the site, because obviously we had those Swedish filmmakers that went and took a look at it, but they definitely took that risk knowing that they could potentially be, you know, prosecuted for doing that. But now that there is no sort of protection, it's a little bit different. And I'm very curious to see, and I'm very interested to see as time goes on, as more and more people do, you know, investigations, examinations, and research, I'm really interested to see what we might actually find out.
Yeah. And I also feel, again, with the hole that may have been too small to sink the ship, like I feel like no hole is too small to sink a ship.
Yeah.
If no one's watching, like maybe it's in a relevant area. No one's hanging out like the car carrier of a ship, for example.
Right.
And if the That's water true. Starts coming in and no one's around to see it, they might not notice till it's too late.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, this would be kind of like like a martyr, like a suicide mission. But who knows if someone knew like that a small hole would be made, like just enough to be under the radar and like, you know, kept people at bay from, you know, going into that area, or made sure, again, it was in an irrelevant area. I mean, again, like I said, that's definitely like a suicide mission, but
yeah, I mean, crazier things have happened though.
Exactly. So,
yeah. And like I was saying, like the funny part to me too about this whole thing is like, why were they so dismissive about the 13-foot hole? Like, even if that doesn't sound super significant to the 500 whatever foot ship it was, 13 feet, why aren't they wondering what caused that?
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think too, I obviously a lot of time, I mean, not a lot of time has passed, but time has passed, right? We definitely, from 1994 to 2021, I mean, we definitely have a lot of different world leaders in positions of power than we did in 1994, right? So much time has passed. So I almost wonder if maybe past people in power knew something and they didn't want it getting out. And it's just now where people are like, no, they want to know. Like, we want to figure out what's going on. We want to get closure and find out if this was this just bad luck, a bad storm gone wrong? Or was this something more sinister, more politically motivated? Especially now where who really cares? I mean, obviously, I know that these things and these accusations can definitely have political consequences. But I think we're in more of a position now to find that out than maybe in 1994. So
I found it very interesting that in the beginning of the podcast, we discussed Hamad, who killed three people and got off, honestly, with like a citation.
Basically. Yeah. I mean, he served a couple of years, but escaped. So like, does it even count? I don't know.
Right. So like, we had three deaths at the hands of him and, you know, like 3 years of prison and then a citation, or 10 years of prison and a citation. Whereas like the filmmakers, you know, went to the site of the shipwreck and almost were like immediately prosecuted.
Yeah. I think too, maybe it has to do with it being, I don't know. I mean, they are different countries. I mean, that is one thing that's important to keep in mind. Obviously, you know, Finland, Sweden, Norway, Estonia, they're all very similar in a lot of ways, but they are also all separate countries. And Hamad was in Finland, and that was, he was pardoned by the Finnish president, whereas the filmmakers, that was out of Sweden. So again, that might also be, there might be something there too. You know, maybe, I mean, if Sweden's so willing to prosecute these guys, maybe it's because there is something that they know, you know, more than other places. So,
yeah.
Well, thank you everyone for listening and for joining us today. As always, you can find any photos and sources for this case on our website, trilogypodcast.com. And we want to hear what you guys think. So definitely let us know on social media, send us a message, tell us what you think happened, or maybe there's a conspiracy theory that we missed during our research. Let us know.
We release new episodes every Monday, and each week we release two clues leading up to the release of our next episode. The first clue is, you are getting very sleepy. Be sure to check out our Instagram for the second clue later this week.
Thanks again for listening. And as always, you can keep up with all things Thrilogy on social media at Thrilogy Pod, and make story requests on thrilogypodcast.com.